Turn with me this morning in your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 23, verses 14 through 18. We're continuing our series on David. And I mentioned to you last week that we were going to spend 2 weeks in 1 Samuel chapter 23. Last week, we looked at a topic that we called blindsided, about how David was betrayed. Today, I want to talk to you about tough choices. Tough choices. You know, the North Florida Fair will be returning to Tallahassee in just a few weeks. And when I was a kid, when the fair came, that was a big event. In fact, we got out of school half a day one day during the week so we could all go to the fair. And I remember the fair, my dad, he always took us to the fair on Friday night. And we always had a mullet dinner. Somebody was always out there frying mullet, and so we would do that. But my dad wasn't much for rides. He liked to walk in the exhibits. And when you're 8, 9 years old, looking at hogs and cows and blue ribbon quilts doesn't do anything for you. You want to be out there on the midway. And so one year there was a group when I was in elementary school that we decided we wanted to see if we could all go to the fair. So we all went to the fair that half a day we were out. And I remember going into, I don't know, I'm going to call it the Hall of Mirrors. I don't know what the right name is of it. But I can remember going in there. And I thought, you know, this is easy. And then I began making turns. And I began looking for a way out. And I ran into the mirrors a couple of times. And I could not find my way out. I can remember walking along with my hand on the mirrors just trying to find an opening where I could turn and go. And finally, it probably was 3 or 4 minutes, but it seemed like hours, I finally walked out into the sunlight. And I will tell you, I have never gone back in to the Hall of Mirrors. And even now, when the fair comes, and I think Sherry and I have been once, I try not to even go down the lane where the Hall of Mirrors is because I'm afraid some force is going to grab me and suck me back into it. But I was thinking this week as I was reading this passage how life is like that Hall of Mirrors. You make a choice. You make a decision. You think this won't take any time at all, and it sets you on a course. And before long, you realize that you've gone deeper and deeper and deeper. And now you're trying to find a way out. And you're thinking, oh man, if I could just retract my steps, if I can just find a way out of this mess I'm in, if I can just find a way out of this situation I'm in, I will never, ever come back to this way again. It's like that maze that you turn one way and you think that way is going to lead you out, but it doesn't. And today's text centers around two men who loved each other like brothers, David and Jonathan. They're the best of friends, but yet they're both warriors, and they realize that their life could be cut short any time in battle, and so they have entered into what the Bible calls a covenant with each other. And that covenant simply said this: if you live and I die, you take care of my family. And if I live and you die, I'm going to take care of your family. But now they're separated because of choices. David is now a fugitive. He is hiding out from Jonathan's father, King Saul. And I jotted this down, and I want you to hear this part as we begin this message. That one man is hiding his body, but the other man is hiding his heart. One man is hiding his body. The other man is hiding his heart. So in 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 14, it says, David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. Saul sought him every day, but the Lord did not give him into his hand. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh when he learned that Saul had come out to seek his life. Saul's son Jonathan set out and came to David at Horesh. There he strengthened his hand through the Lord. He said to David, "Do not be afraid, for the hand of my father Saul shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be second to you. Everybody hear that? You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be second to you. My father Saul also knows that this is so. Then the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. And now listen to this last sentence. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. I just find it interesting that Jonathan goes to all this trouble to leave the army of Israel. King Saul, Jonathan's father, has brought a group of men out of the army. I guess today we would probably call them special forces. They're out with the intent mission of tracking down David, finding him, and killing him. And they're looking everywhere for David. And somehow Jonathan slips away from Saul's army without being noticed. He knows exactly where to go and find David. And he goes to David. Verse 17 that we read said that he encouraged David. He strengthened his hand. He said to David, "Don't be afraid, David. My father will not find you. And one day, David, you are going to be the next king of Israel. And when you ascend to the throne and you sit down on the throne, David, I'm going to be standing right by your side." He encouraged him. In fact, they made another covenant. This is the third time the Bible talks about them entering into a covenant with each other. They enter into a third covenant with each other in which they confirm their loyalty to each other and their loyalty to God. But then the next sentence just strikes me as being unusual for the events that have occurred. David returned to his home. Jonathan returned to his home, and David remained in the woods. Now, you know, it seems to me that if you were to come to somebody and say to them, a fugitive on the run, particularly one who's hiding from your father, and you would come to that person and say to him, "You are going to be the next king. I'm going to support you. I'm going to stand by you. I'm going to swear allegiance to you and loyalty to you. I'll be your most trusted man. I'll be right there by you, David. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that you succeed as the next king of Israel. And my father knows this, and that's why he's turned against you." You would think that the next thing would be, "And I'm ready right now." But he didn't. He took the trouble of finding David. And he goes through this whole spiel, this speech to David about, "You're going to be the next king, and I'm going to support you, and I'm going to commit my loyalty to you." But when it came time to end the conversation, Jonathan went back to the palace and left David in the cave. I don't understand why Jonathan would go to all that trouble. Why not just send David a message? Why not just send a courier to tell David this? Why go to all the trouble of finding David to pep him up and to encourage him and to give him a little, you know, that kind of halftime talk that apparently Jimbo Fisher wasn't able to deliver yesterday? You know, to give that little, "I want you to know I'm for you. Rah, rah, rah. Here I am. I'm behind you." Except the truth was Jonathan was way behind him. "I'm for you, David. When you come into the throne, I'm going to be right there." But when it came time to say, "And I'm willing to commit to you right now," Jonathan couldn't do it. And so I was thinking, why would Jonathan do that? And I believe that Jonathan was making a series of head choices, not heart choices. Jonathan was thinking this whole process out. He would not commit his heart to David. He would not throw everything toward David. He was thinking it all out, and the word that kept popping up, I believe, in Jonathan's mind was a four-letter word that we all deal with every day: cost. How much will it cost me to make this choice? After all, Jonathan had to be concerned with what other people might think. What would that cost him? He was the son of the king. How would it look for Jonathan to turn against his dad and to throw his allegiance to David? How would that play out back in Jerusalem? How would that play out in the castle, in the palace? How would that play out with Saul's army? And so Jonathan began to think about, what will other people think about my choice? What will other people think? I mean, after all, how's it going to look for Jonathan to choose the fugitive, the guy on the run? And then I think Jonathan probably thought about the personal cost, how his choice would affect his family. Now think about this. We read this earlier, I believe in chapter 22, where David was in the cave, and or maybe chapter 21, where David is hiding from Saul, and David's family comes to him, and basically they say to him, "We are now exiles because of you. And Saul is going to send his army and kill us. You got to do something." And so David has to take his family into another country. He takes them to Moab, and he goes to the king of Moab, and he says, "Let my family stay here and protect them until all this mess, this situation is settled with Saul." And I'm sure Jonathan is thinking about that. Wait a minute, David's family's in Moab. How's this going to affect my family? What's it going to mean to my children? What's it going to mean to my wife? What's it going to mean to my in-laws if they hear that Jonathan is staying in the cave with David? How's it going to affect them? And so we take that in. I'm sure Jonathan took that into cost. What was going to be the personal cost for him? And then, of course, how is his choice going to affect his relationship with Saul? Well, that was certainly going to mess it up. I mean, if word got back to Saul that your son Jonathan has not only gone to David, but has thrown his loyalty to David, and now that word's getting out in the army of what Jonathan has done, and there may be some members of the army that are lying with Jonathan that now may go to David. I'm sure Jonathan is thinking about how it's going to affect his relationship with his father, and that's one of the costs that he had to provide. If I make this choice, what's it going to do? And I'm sure Jonathan was thinking about the cost of this decision that was facing him, and not just what it was going to cost him. What's it going to mean to my family if I do this? It's very possible that Jonathan thought that his choice would cost him everything that was personal or that was real to him. And sometimes that gets in the way of our making choices, doesn't it? We start weighing the cost of what's it going to cost me as far as my family? What's it going to cost me as far as my relationship? What's it going to cost me as far as my friends? What's it going to cost me as far as my little group if they hear that I've thrown my allegiance to David? I'm probably going to lose them as friends. I may lose relationship with my dad. I may lose relationship with my wife. I may lose relationship with my sons. I may lose relationship with this one and that one, and I'm going to lose my place in the army. All these costs are going through Jonathan's mind as he's standing there looking at David, who's hiding out in a cave. And maybe Jonathan thought that he still had time to fully commit. You know, when we think we've got time, we can sort of dilly-dally around. I run into this all the time in sales. You know, Friday I was sitting with somebody in a bank office, and I'm telling, you know, they've told me what they want, and so we're now at that point, you know, where it's time to sign on the dotted line, and I said, "I've got everything ready for you. I can have what you want delivered to you next week." And it's always at that point of right there, it's hinging. And, well, I need to talk it over with somebody. And I'm always thinking, well, you mean they don't know you're here? You haven't talked this over with them before? I mean, you just came up with this idea on your own. You haven't told anybody about this at your business? It's that place that where you're at the hinge, and it can go either way. And when you're in sales, you feel that. You can tell it's vacillating back and forth. And we feel that. And I'm sure Jonathan maybe thinks that I've got more time. I don't have to make a full commitment today. I mean, after all, David, I told you, when you come on the throne, you sit down on the throne, I'll be there. I don't have to fully commit today. I can just make a partial commitment. I'll tell you what, David, call me in a week. Let me think about it. Let me call some other people and see what they're paying. And you reach that place, and I'm sure that Jonathan maybe felt that he still had a little more time, that Jonathan, in his mind, he envisioned this coronation where the trumpets would be blaring and the birds would be flying and the people would be singing and the harps would be playing. And here comes David sitting in a chariot with a drip pulled by a white horse, and Jonathan visions himself as the one driving the chariot. And boy, when David walks up on that throne, I'm going to roll the red carpet out for him. And when he sits down, I'm going to yell to all the people, "Long live the king!" But right now, I think I've got a little more time. I don't really have to make a decision right now, do I? I mean, I can still go back to my home and leave you in the woods, can I, David? Maybe Jonathan was afraid that if he made this choice, he was afraid of the other choices that would follow. And sometimes that's one of the costs we take into consideration. If I do this, what other choices am I going to have to make? And I don't want to make those choices. Those are tough. I make this choice, and the next choice is going to be even tougher. I mean, here in the Hall of Mirrors, I can go to the left or right, and if I go to the left, it may take me out, but it may take me deeper. If I go to the right, you know, there's no exit sign there. So if I go to the right, it may take me right on out, but it may take me deeper in this maze. And I'm sure Jonathan was thinking about that. If I make this choice right now to throw my allegiance to David, what other choices am I going to have to make? And they're going to get tougher. Because this wasn't just an overnight stay that David had in this cave. It went into weeks and months and years. And Jonathan, I'm sure, is probably thinking about, if I do this, I've got to leave the palace. And I've got to come live in a cave. I've got to leave that nice big king-size waterbed and end up sleeping on the ground. I've got to leave my wife and my children and my dad and be a fugitive. And I've got to realize that those hounds I hear baying off in the distance, they're after me now. They're not just after David, they're after me. I'm going to have to leave the king's table where I sit and I have servants and the food is brought to me and they wash my hands and my feet and I don't have to clean the house. I mean, everything is done for me until now. But if I make this choice, now I'm going to have to join with David and be scrounging around looking for food. I'm going to get my hands dirtied. In other words, Jonathan realized that if he made the choice to align himself with David that day in the cave, the old Jonathan would be no more. There would be no going back to the old Jonathan. It would be a totally different lifestyle from now on. And I guess you know where I'm going with this as I'm closing. It's the same kind of choice that Jesus talked about. Jesus said this in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 16. He said to his disciples, "If anyone wishes to come after me," and listen to these four words, "he must deny himself." I mean, Jesus laid it out right there before him. I mean, Jesus says, come into the cave, take a look around, see what it looks like in here. It's damp. It's musty. There's no beds in here. There's no table set up in here. There's no toilet with a seat that goes down by itself like the one they advertise on television now. I mean, this is rough living here. He must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. In Luke 14, verse 27, Jesus said, "Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me, he cannot be my disciple." And then in Matthew chapter 19, verse 21, Jesus said this to the rich young ruler, "If you wish to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." I mean, Jesus said to them, if you're going to choose me, you're going to have to choose, because there are going to be other choices that come up to you by this choice you make today. The same concept that Jonathan wrestled with. And so in my relationship with Christ, I have to come to that decision, and I have to make tough choices. I have to make the choice of this. Is what I do on Sunday morning just lip service? Because I know I can walk out the door of the church and I can go and live my life just the way I want to. It doesn't affect my daily life. It's just an hour a week. But if I really throw it all in and I commit to Christ, what is it going to cost me? Are we like Jonathan? We seek Jesus out to tell him that we're with him, only to go on our own way. Are we cost conscious of what others might think, of what it might cost us, of the other decisions that will follow? Or do we think that I still have more time to make this decision? You know, I believe Jonathan was very authentic in his love for David. I believe Jonathan did love David. I believe Jonathan believed that there would come a day in which David would ascend to the throne and Jonathan would then swear his allegiance and his loyalty to David. I'm sure Jonathan played out in his mind time after time after time how it would look and how proud David would be when Jonathan began to cry out and lead the people into the cries of "Long live King David." But when it came down to Jonathan making that choice that day, he couldn't do it. Or maybe I should say he wouldn't do it. Jonathan went back to his home. He went back to Saul. David stayed in the cave. David continued to run from Saul's army. David continued to be pursued by an army who one of his top generals was a man who had just told him a few days before, "I'm with you, David. I'm for you, David. I can't help. I've got to lead these special rangers out looking for you, but David, I'm all with you." Unfortunately, one day it all ended for Jonathan, because he stayed with Saul, his father, and he stayed with leading the army. And one day the army went out to fight the Philistines, and Jonathan was killed in battle. And in an effort to demoralize the Israeli army, the Philistines mutilated his body and cut his head off. That day that Jonathan imagined would one day come never came. David would one day rise to the throne and sit down on the throne, and the people would cry out, "Long live the king." But Jonathan would not be there. Because Jonathan, in an attempt to keep what he had, lost everything. In an effort to maintain the status quo, and in an effort to not have to make tough choices, Jonathan eventually lost the ability to make choices, and other people began to make choices for him. And when his father Saul said, "We are going out to fight the Philistines," he made a choice for his son Jonathan that Jonathan would never recover from. Choices. Tough choices. So in closing, I want to ask all of us a question, not just you, but all of us. And the question is this: are you a Jonathan? Am I a Jonathan? Father, your word does not miss bringing home to us life choices and life decisions. Your son Jesus did not miss bringing home to us life choices and life decisions. In fact, Father, your son Jesus said that he came to turn father against son, and son against father, and daughter against mother, and mother against daughter. He said that by my coming, a man's enemies will be those of his own household. You call us, Father, to make tough choices. Choices that will lead to even tougher choices. Because you don't call us to church, you call us to the cross. You don't call us to a pew, you call us to Calvary. Lord, you call us to yourself. And Lord, in my own life, I see Jonathan. I see, Lord, how it is so easy for me when faced with tough choices to vacillate, to punt the ball, to kick the can again. Lord, I think it's in all of us. But I pray, Father, that a spirit of David would rise up within us, that we would say, I have decided. I've made a choice. And regardless of what happens, I'm sticking to this and I'm going forward. May we decide to follow Jesus with everything that is within us, and to face those choices and to make those choices, Father, that please you. We give you thanks now in Jesus' name. Amen.